VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101 with host Susan Barnstone. We're so happy you've joined us this weekend. Over the next hour, you'll learn the tips, tricks, and vital information that'll help you keep yourself confident and safe. Now, here's the host of Crime Prevention 101, Susan Barnstone.
And hello, 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 everybody. And yes, indeed, this is Crime Prevention 101, and I certainly am Susan Barnstone. Welcome you today. And I have the show. My show today is really exciting for me. It's a topic that I've wanted to talk about for a long time. We're going to be talking about street harassment. And for those of you who aren't really sure what it is, it's not just when a woman is walking by a construction site or by a group of men hanging out in front of a store and gets whistled at and stuff like that. Simply by walking down the street or being in any public place, and I'm saying beaches, parks, dance clubs, whatever, women can be subject to behavior ranging from the annoying comments to just downright terrifying activities and actions. I'm talking about whistles and catcalls, unwanted compliments, sexually explicit comments, fondling, groping, other kinds of inappropriate touching, men who block our path, who stand too close or rub up against us on buses and subways and elevators, men who expose themselves to us, who masturbate in front of us, and in extreme cases, men who follow us, stalk us, and threaten us with violence or rape. This is street harassment, and it's a problem pretty much all over the world. And I have two experts here today with me that are going to talk to me about this subject. Laura Beth Nielsen, who is the author of License to Harass, Law, Hierarchy, and Offensive Public Speech. And I've got Brittany Shute, who is the co-director of Hollaback Boston, which is part of a worldwide chain of Hollaback organizations that is helping to publicize this issue and to empower people who are victims of it. And I'm very excited to have them with me today. But before I go in to get started and introduce you to everybody, I have a little bit of a rant that I want to make. And I'm introducing a new segment on the show, and I'm calling it There Ought to Be a Law. And this is where I get to complain about stupid things that people do and say regarding self-defense and crime prevention. And this week's rant involves an episode of a reality show I happened to catch the other day called Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And it's not, I don't actually watch this show, but I happened to see a teaser on it, and it was talking about the Kardashian girls taking a self-defense class because of some incident that had happened in their business establishment. So I naturally was interested. I am a self-defense instructor, so I tuned in, and I was pretty happy with most of this segment. There were four Kardashians who participated in this class. They took this class in L.A. It was probably an hour or two-hour class, really hard to tell the way that they shot it for TV. And it was pretty good, most particularly because it provided a padded attacker for the students to practice on so that you could really strike and counter an attacker full force and have a very realistic experience of what an attack is like. That is the best way to learn self-defense. So after they finish this course, the next thing that they do, they go home, and of course they're telling their family, their stepfather and their brother about the course. And the stepfather, who is a former Olympian, a decathlon champion, gold medal winner, nice, powerful man, immediately, of course, trying to help, grabs each one of them in a bear hug and starts flinging them around. And of course, there was nothing they could do. They were completely overpowered, flailing around. And at the end of the show, they said, no, the self-defense didn't work. It didn't work. Nothing happened. We couldn't do anything. So here is my rant on this. Now, would anybody expect to take an hour or two of a driving course, saying you didn't know how to, let's say you didn't know how to drive, you take a two-hour driving course, would you really be ready to get behind the wheel of a car? Well, you know what? Learning the skill of self-defense is no different. You need at least 4 to 6 weeks of solid coursework and practice before you can reasonably expect to know what to do if you're taken by surprise or overpowered. You know? Come on. And number two, really important, in order for self-defense techniques to work, you have to do them for real. You got to do them full force with the intent of hurting their assailant. Now, that's why the course that the Kardashians took provided a padded attacker for them so they could see what it was like to go all out. Now, you're not going to do that to your helpful father, your friendly boyfriend, or other friend that you enlist. You're not going to kick and strike them the way you would do a real attacker. So here's my rant. It just burns me up that people seeing this episode might think it's a waste of time to take a self-defense class. I mean, I think that's just criminal, and I think there ought to be a law. Yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about. All right, I'm calming myself down. I don't want to scare my guests. And I want to introduce you to my two experts today that we're going to be talking about street harassment. First, let me introduce Laura Beth Nielsen, and I'm going to read you her bio. She is a research professor at the American Bar Foundation. She's an associate professor of sociology and the director of the Legal Studies Program at Northwestern University. Her specialty is the sociology of law, particularly how ordinary people understand the law, and the relationship between law and inequalities of race, gender, and class. And she is also the author of License to Harass, Law, Hierarchy, and Offensive Public Speech. And this is the book about the socio-legal consequences of confrontational public speech. Hi, Laura Beth, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. I'm so glad you're here. My second guest is Brittany Schut, who is speaking to me all the way from Copenhagen, Denmark, today. And Brittany co-runs an organization called Hollaback Boston, which has sister chapters all over the world. And on their website, I'm going to quote what they say here, whether you're commuting, lunching, partying, dancing, walking, chilling, drinking, or sunning, you have the right to feel safe, confident, and sexy without being the object of someone's fantasy. So stop walking on and holla back. Send us pictures, videos, post your stories on the website of Street Harassers. Awesome concept. I love it. Welcome, Brittany. Welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Absolutely, Susan. Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure. All right. Let's talk a little bit. Laura Beth, why don't we start with you? Now, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here for
sure.
People that aren't clear about this. Why should we care about sexual harassment? I mean, can't women just walk away if they're out on the street, you know, depending on the circumstance and the severity?
Well,
there
are a lot of questions in that one question. Why should we care is that this is an affront to women's equality in public spaces. And we all recognize that this kind of speech and behavior that you outlined at the beginning is unacceptable in the workplace because it puts women at a disadvantage that's on the basis of their sex, and that is illegal discrimination in the context of a workplace. We also recognize that this should not be how women are treated in their homes, right? There's been over the last 20 years a sea change in how we think about domestic violence and what goes on behind closed doors.
Absolutely.
Why should public space be any different? Now, the law has various answers to that question that we can talk about, but the fact of the matter is the behavior and the male hierarchy that it represents and reinforces is the same in the workplace, in the family, and in public spaces. I think that in this democratic society, the public space is supposed to be the place where we can all go and interact and do our civic duty. We all need to get to work. We've got to get to school. Why should that be a place where this kind of inequality is allowed to go on?
Good point. And that's what we want to make. It's not just the fact that you could walk away. Why should we have to be subjected to it? correct.
And that's the second question, is can women walk away? And that's a complicated, you know, it's a complicated question, because you can't always walk away. You can't walk away if you need to get on that train to be at work, and so you have to stay on it, and the guy next to you is masturbating, or you can't walk away if somebody's going to follow you, and why should you have to walk away in the first place?
Excellent point. And I actually want to explore that quite a bit. But tell me this: how did you become interested in the whole topic of street harassment, and how did License to Harass come about, your book?
Well, I was interested in it in graduate school. I started thinking about it as a prospective research topic, and the more I talked to different professors about it, the more I realized that men don't understand that this happens. There is an experience of being in public that involves thinking very carefully about what you're wearing and when you're going and which street you should walk down and what time of day and which shoes and should I have on an iPod or not so that people don't talk to me, that men are typically very clueless about. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. It's something that women are taught and internalize so early that it's not something we're often talking about. And so maybe the men around us who are sympathetic don't even know we're doing this.
And I think they're taught too, right?
Right. Yeah. And that disjuncture the women professors I talked to said, oh, that would be great. That's such a great topic. You will really be making visible something that's really invisible that goes on in public space. And the men said, huh? And I thought, oh, we gotta do this.
I totally understand that. This was quite a thorough book. You conducted over 100 interviews, if I'm not correct, and 120 hours of field work.
Right.
And you observed public interaction in many diverse settings and in homogeneous settings, and you really came up with a comprehensive study about this issue in that area of California, Northern California.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I thought it was pretty thorough.
I got a chance to look through the book, and it's thorough, but readable.
Yeah, there are a lot of good stories, bad stories, interesting stories to think about in the book. And yes, I observed interactions between strangers in public places all over, from public transportation to sort of in front of sidewalk cafes. I observed it day and evening hours. I observed work days and weekend days to try to really capture the variation. You know, it's different when you're harassed and it's dark and you're alone than during the day. And so I really wanted to vary what I saw and when I saw it, and to try to get the big, broad spectrum of the kinds of interactions that are going on out there.
Do you have any statistics on how often street harassment occurs? And Brittany, maybe you also have a thought on this.
Oh dear, I have a thought.
Number, okay?
Oh, not even close. I suspect that it's probably very similar to statistics on sort of what we think of as more generalized sexual violence. And because that's so grossly underreported, I can't even imagine how grossly underreported incidents of street harassment are.
Okay. All right, you know what? We're coming up on a break. Hold this thought. When we come back, I want to talk about what the targets of street harassment usually do about. So everybody stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss this.
News. Opinion.
Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, How to Respond to Danger in 20 Seconds or Less. Check out www.fightsafetyinc.com. CrimeSafe.com for more information. You'll also find information there on Susan's upcoming Crime Prevention 101 Personal Safety Teleseminars. Think fast, talk fast, fight smart, which stress the many opportunities you have to deter or defuse a criminal encounter and how to use your brains instead of your muscles in a fight. Look for the new book information or sign up for Susan Bartlestone's Personal Safety Seminars at www.fightsafe.com today. Have you ever thought about having your own internet talk show? Well, if you said yes, then click About Us. Then click Be a Host to get more information. Or just call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417.
Say that again.
480-294-6417. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions at fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions at fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Welcome back, everybody. And we're talking about street harassment today with Laura Beth Nielsen, the author of License to Harass, and Brittany Shute from Hollaback Boston, the anti-street harassment activist group. And I was asking if we have any idea how often street harassment occurs. And Laura Beth, did you find something on that?
Well, 62% of women reported to me that they experience offensive or sexually suggestive comments made to them in public places every day or often. So let me just say that again. 62% of the women I interviewed report that this happens to them every day or
That's
often.
That's huge. And Brittany, I know that that Hollaback Boston was reporting that they get about 1,000 hits a day on the website. And I'd asked you off air if that was accurate, and you said you thought it was, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what's been going on, but it's usually more like 1,000 a month.
1,000 a month, okay.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it usually varies.
That's still a pretty big figure. In fact, I'm glad it's not 1,000 a day. Not for your sake, but just makes me so mad if it was really 1,000 a day that people felt the need to check into street harassment. All right, let's talk about what the target of street harassment can usually does about it. Laura Beth, you did some research on this in the
right.
study. Yeah.
The most common reaction to street harassment is to ignore it. And I know we're talking today about sort of the outrage and the just feeling of frustration associated with it. But there's also this very real fear. And so women, when I interviewed them, talked about, you know, I'd love to say something, but I don't know if that guy is, you know, if it's going to make him turn around and do something to me. So there's this very detailed thinking about who can I respond to and who would it be not safe to respond to. So mostly women aren't going to respond at night. They're not going to respond when they're alone, which is, of course, when it most often happens, because street harassers target oftentimes women who are walking alone. And so unfortunately, or maybe fortunately from a safety perspective, the most common response is to do nothing about it. Now, some women do report hollering back, and that's great. Now there's this new option that really wasn't around when I was doing my research of taking a photo and putting it up on a Hollaback website, which I think is great.
Yeah, baby.
Public shaming of these men is good. And some people do report it. So if it is a construction site or it is a worker and you can identify where the person works, you might, you know, say you're on a university campus and it's workmen. I don't like to stereotype that it's all about workmen, because it is most certainly
not.
But in the context where you can identify something about the person, you can complain to the university, ask the university that all of their contracts with subcontractors include a no harassment clause. There are a lot of different things that you can do to holla
of
back.
Where the harassment occurs.
Right.
The most common form, just walking down the street or being in a public place, that now there's a judgment call here. And I think we can agree that this is, of course, it's an individual's choice to make. And the severity or the nature of the harassment is going to take a part in this. But, Brittany, I think you'll be interested in this. I wanted to bring this up at this point because I went to check some of the postings on some of the a number of the hollabacks. Mm-hmm. And I found this posting that I thought we could talk about. And the woman said, the title of her post is, "I Let Myself Down. I haven't been street harassed in a while, but I got harassed a few times this past week, and I let myself down in how I reacted." And the story she said was she was walking to her office, and she passed these guys on a park bench, and one of them said, "Hey, smile, you're beautiful." And she said, "And I didn't make eye contact," and he goes, "Okay, frown then." He said, "Of course, you know, this is pretty benign, but it's still an invasion of my space and a way to mark me out as a sexual object, and I did nothing, and I was just fuming." And, yeah, unwanted compliments can be viewed as harassment. Some people will view them that way, some people won't, but it is really important that if you choose not to do anything, that you know that you have that option and you don't have to blame yourself because you did not respond. And, Brittany, you and I were talking about my little story. I'm going to tell it on air now. One of my pet peeves in this world is seeing men pee on the street. I totally hate that. And it was my custom when I would see it. And I'm in New York City here, so we see that a lot. I bet you see it in Boston, right? It happens there. It probably happens in California. So I would see some guy peeing in the street, and I got a nice, big, loud voice, and I'm calling out, "Hey, nobody wants to see you peeing in the street. Why don't you go to a bathroom? Who wants to look at you doing out? That's you know, that's disgusting." And I would say, and most of the time I realized afterwards, I would be kind of like far away from the person in a nice open area. And most of the time when I did that, that person got ashamed and kind of covered up and, you know, would slink away. So I was very happy. I'm liking this. And then I had done it quite a number of times. And then one day I am in the New York City subway system. And I'm going through a small passage where the uptown trains connect to the downtown trains. And this is in the middle of the day. There are tons of people there. And sure enough, there is a guy peeing right in the passageway. So I see him, and here I go. "Nobody wants to see you peeing and out here. Why don't you go go to the bathroom? There's one right upstairs." And, you know, that guy turned around. He glared at me. He started cursing at me with his dick in his hands. And I apologize, audience. I'm getting graphic here, but let's get real. This is what it's about. And he started coming at me, and I looked at him, and I said, "Oh, my God, this guy is crazy, and I don't want any of this." And you know what? I just took off.
Mm-hmm.
And thereafter, whenever I saw the guy peeing in the street, I just let it alone. Now maybe I would take a camera phone picture of it and post it on Hollaback's website, but I just want the audience to understand that you don't have to take any action at all, and you don't have to blame yourself for not taking action.
This is Brittany. I think that part of what, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about over time is that this is such a shaming thing that happens to you in the first place. It's so shaming that you're walking down the street and someone screams at you, or that you're on the subway and someone touches you. There are these things that make you feel guilty about existing in the first place.
That we're going into a different area there, though. I'm just, you know, touching is a whole different thing, and I agree with you.
Well, and all I'm saying is that I think there's already a lot of guilt associated with the things that happen to us in public of this nature. And so I want to be really clear about the fact that we don't need to impose any more guilt on ourselves.
Exactly.
I think what you're saying is really important. Because
exactly.
We already feel bad enough most of the time. I know many women, I myself included, have been in a situation where you know, someone flashes me, someone yells at me, I mean, whatever the incident is, and I'm so shocked that I can't respond because I can't think quickly enough, even though, you know, I'm someone that supposedly knows a lot about it and I've dealt with it and I've talked about it for years. That doesn't matter. That doesn't mean that I don't freeze up the same way that everyone else does. So I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, that's a major component of it, that women then say, oh, and I didn't handle it, it's my fault. No, it's not their fault at all. That's the whole point.
That's exactly what I wanted to bring out. And I am someone who's trained to handle it, too. And you know what? I pick my battles. Because if you choose to make the confrontation, even if you choose to use that cell phone camera, you have to be prepared for the possibility that an unpleasant consequence is going to occur. And I want people to you know, pick those battles very carefully and then make them with an informed decision about making them.
Well, sorry.
Yes,
this is Laura Beth. The interesting thing to me from a sociological perspective is if you went and got a policeman and said, this man has his penis out for the purpose of urinating in the subway, that man is getting a ticket, if not getting handcuffed and taken away. If you go to the same policeman and report harassment or flashing, that they're going to be a lot less concerned about that. Flashing, perhaps, but certainly not sexually intimidating behavior that's verbal.
And that's one of the reasons I love Holla Back. And we're going to talk a little more about what the kind of support that they, just knowing you're not alone in this is extremely valuable. But I just wanted to mention one more thing, because we're getting ready to come up to break. This young woman came up with her own solutions and safety tip, and she created her own business cards that she's going to hand out to harassing men. She said, because it's hard for her to make confrontations, and she thinks this would be a safe way to do it. And the cards say, don't harass women. So if someone makes this comment to you, you got your business card, and that means you're prepared. And you know in advance when you're going to hand it out and when you're not. And I'd also like to see something like unwanted compliments are street harassment to me or from my perspective, or something to that effect, to kind of let them know that even something as simple as you look beautiful today, if you don't want this compliment, this is harassment.
So perhaps I don't exist for your sexual pleasure?
I love it. Whatever you like. And that I think is a bit of a safer way than maybe confronting somebody directly or pointing the camera phone at them or something like that. It's an option, and that's what this show is about. It's about giving options. And I think that we're going to come up on a break shortly. So you know what I'm going to do? Let's take our break now. When we come back, I want to talk, Brittany, I want to talk about Holla Back and what's offered there a little bit, and then we'll do some more talking about some legal options. All right, so let's get ready for our break. Everybody stay tuned. Got great stuff for you coming up.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.fightsafe.com for more information. You'll also find information there on Susan's upcoming Crime Prevention 101 personal safety teleseminars. Think fast, talk fast, fight smart, which stress the many opportunities you have to deter or defuse a criminal encounter and how to use your brains instead of your muscles in a fight. Look for the new book information or sign up for Susan Bartlestone's personal safety seminars at www.fightsafe.com today.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Welcome back, everybody. Yes, indeed. Crime Prevention 101 here, and I'm talking with Laura Beth Nielsen, author of License to Harass, and Brittany Shute from Hollaback, Boston, about the topic of street harassment. And before the break, we started getting on the subject of what some of the ways that people can respond to street harassment. Brittany, talk about Hollaback to me. And there are 16 U.S. chapters, right, and about 4 or 5 international chapters of this organization, correct?
It depends on how you want to classify them. Some of them use the name and some of them don't, but I would still consider a lot of the websites to be, you know, allied sites or in some way affiliated with one another. Technically, none of them are affiliated in the sense that they're all run by independent people and we're not responsible for content on the other sites. But, you know, in name recognition primarily, you know, we all exist as sort of this contingency, if you will, of, you know, it's sort of a movement. It's kind of fractured when, you know, most of us don't actually work together, but they do exist in different cities and they definitely exist around the world as well. So,
and they focus around the same principle, correct?
Yeah. I mean, different places call it different things. In India, they call it eve teasing.
Yeah, I love that.
In the States, we call it, you know, street harassment, generally speaking. But it's all the same concept. It's about not feeling safe in public space due to, you know, verbal threats or, you know, physical intimidation of, like, a sexual nature.
Well, we know this exists all over the world. So that's,
yeah.
Now, that's a given. So tell me about Hollaback Boston and how it works and how it got started.
Well, the original Hollaback chapter started in New York City about 3 years ago now, I think it was, and we started about 2.5 years ago. I think we picked up about 6 months after they did. All of the active Hollaback websites, of which there are really only several that post regularly, mostly what we do is we exist as a resource for people online. I don't personally have any sort of illusions about, you know, what we do being more than just a website. I think that in Boston we've done, you know, events and we've done public speaking events before where we've talked to people and we've tried to engage the community talking about this issue, but I also think that for the most part these are websites, and the websites exist as a forum for place for people to post experiences about street harassment, primarily women,
but not
young people, you know, people who experience some homophobic slurs in public and some people who experience racial slurs in public.
And racial slurs, right, exactly.
Well, this is Laura Beth. I think one of the really exciting things about Hollaback from my perspective, so I approach it more as a scholarly matter. I'm trying to measure it, see what people think about it, if they think there should be laws and that kind of thing. But the thing that's exciting to me about Hollaback is precisely that it does arise sort of spontaneously and differently in the different places where this problem exists, as you say, all over the world. And so it really does begin to feel like there's a social movement saying this is unacceptable. And this is how we started with sexual harassment in the workplace, and this is how women started the fight against domestic violence, and this is how women started the fight for the vote. And I agree that, you know, this is a resource that tech-savvy younger people are going to be looking at, but I think it can be very useful for bringing it to the public when, as in the case of the Hollaback New York City chapter, a woman turned around to get a picture of a guy who had just harassed her, and he was flashing her. Then that photo was used as evidence in the trial. He was found guilty, And it led to a very public discussion about sexual harassment, the sort of line between sexual harassment or street harassment and illegal behavior. It put this individual in jail, and it put the website on the sort of national media scene. They were on Good Morning America, and having
That's
a
right.
more public national discussion about what are we going to do about this.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also one of the important things for me in this whole issue is that talking about blaming the victim, you know, it's the woman's fault. We have so it brings to the front that this is not the woman's fault. She is wearing, people claim that because she's wearing low-cut clothes or, you know, revealing clothes, that she is inviting these comments. It's bringing this idea to fore that it's not our fault. It's the fault of the person that can't keep from drooling, you know, or yelling, or can't keep his hands off of himself. We've got it again. It's that same thing about blaming the victim if she was sexually assaulted or raped, and blaming the victim for not being able to walk down the street when it's really their problem, not our problem, right? And that was great publicity that they got, and I think that's one of the best things for me about the different Hollaback websites, because that message comes through, right, Brittany? That's
mm-hmm.
huge. That's so huge about that, and I just love that. I'd like to give another example of a posting. This is on the New York website, and it's just short and sweet. And the headline is, "Your crotch says peace, my camera phone says war." I love it. And she's heard that it's a picture of this guy sitting there with his legs crossed. And she said, Emma submitted this, "At Bryant Park by 5th Avenue at 41st and 40th Street 2 minutes ago, this disgusting pervert waited for my eye contact and put a peace sign by his crotch. Dirty, gross old man." So who bears the responsibility? Dirty old man bears it. Love it. And then there's a picture. There's another one. It's called Beach Jerker.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this, I really wish. Now we are. We're coming up to our closing segment. I want to talk a little bit about legislation on this. There any stories, Brittany, that are on the website that you thought are memorable you'd like to mention?
Oh gosh, that's an excellent question. I don't know that I would want to pick one. I think that there are a lot that have come in over time that have been really, really telling. And I mean, I think it's what you said earlier. I think it was what Laura said, which is that every city has their own, you know, sort of very special relationship with street harassers. So it's, you know, living in Boston, I know I, for instance, personally have been followed a number of times, and I don't think that that's particularly uncommon, but I know that I've had a hard time getting people to sort of respond to me when I say that over time, because other people either have not acknowledged it, or it doesn't happen to them because we don't live in the same neighborhoods, or we aren't in the same places at the same time. Maybe they don't walk after dark. I don't know. I think that I don't know if I want to pick a post or not. I think that there's a really wide range of experiences shared for the most part. That I think that is something I really appreciate.
That's what's so enlightening about this website, you know. And if you don't have the experience that it's happening to so many other people, you tend to blame yourself and isolate yourself. Well, I shouldn't have been doing this and whatever. And I think it's amazing. And there's some really great resources, by the way. This was also I took from the New York City Hollaback New York City website for publications on sexual harassment and More Girls for Gender Equity and Men Can Stop Rape is listed there, and I love that organization. I interviewed them a few shows back. If any of you out there didn't catch it, go back into the archives and catch that interview. They're just a great group. And they're also addressing the issues of, you know, male identity in terms of this problem as well, confronting women on the street like this. There's the Street Harassment Project was listed on the on that website. And I, all the Hollabacks tend to have resources or have resources for people in those local areas.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany?
They
all list the resources. That's great.
It depends. Yeah, I mean, it depends on where you are. Unfortunately, you know, the bigger cities tend to have more resources than some of the smaller cities. But we have a local resource site on the Boston site in addition to sort of our generalized resources.
Okay, Brittany, do you think there is a need for more legislation? I mean, what exists now, Laura? But we were talking about certain forms of it. This does come up against the First Amendment.
Sure.
Is that?
Yes, absolutely. Any kind of legislation that you might propose, and there have been some attempts to do this, do run up against First Amendment problems. One of the things that I point out in my book and that I think is really interesting is that there is legislation all over the place, and in every city we've mentioned, Boston, Chicago, New York, against panhandling. There are regulations against that kind of speech. But there are not. But when you propose a legislation on racist speech or sexist speech like we've been talking about today, First Amendment. And so there's a definite inequality in sort of in the legal system of how we think about public speech. And when it bothers businessmen who are trying to get on the train, we pass laws. And when it's bothering women and sexual in nature, we say, but the First Amendment.
And this issue of panhandling, and actually one of the comments about, and it was a male reviewer, is that why that was considered street harassment, but that to me, that's a given.
Well, it's an unsolicited comment from a stranger in a public place, and you might not be bothered by it. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, people are far less bothered by it. When I interview people and say, is this a big problem? They say, no. Is sexually suggestive speech a big problem? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a disjuncture between what the legal system is willing to recognize as a problem and how people experience being in public.
And as long as the panhandler is sort of sitting down and, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe shaking the cup or something, it's when they get in your face. When they block your path, when they hover over you in the subways, that's a same thing with street harassment. And that's where these decisions of who I'm going to confront and when. If you know, some people, it's just easier to walk away from the catcalls, but if somebody's blocking your path,
that is illegal.
Yeah. Oh, good. I didn't actually know that.
If you feel threatened or detained, that is illegal.
Is it a misdemeanor? What is the charge? Disorderly.
Well, it's illegal to threaten someone, and so we've recognized this with racist speech around cross burning, which used to be considered protected First Amendment free speech, but in a recent case, Virginia versus Black, the Supreme Court finally said, actually cross-burning is a threat. And so we are recognizing threat as one of the ways to differentiate between protected and unprotected speech.
Okay, Laura Beth, hold that. We're coming up for our final break. And when we come back, we're going to just do a little summing up on the issue.
Have you ever thought about having your own internet talk show? Well, if you said yes, then click About Us. Then click Be a Host to get more information. Or just call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417.
Say that again.
480-294-6417. VoiceAmerica.com.
Divorce, child custody, support, and visitation, division of property, attorneys, court. Just the thought of divorce is stressful enough. Never mind the combative, destructive, and expensive process. Is there a better way? Yes, divorce mediation. On Divorce Mediation, Myths and Facts, host Philip Mulford, one of the country's top divorce mediators, will discuss this incredibly successful alternative. Formerly a practicing attorney, Philip will explore the myths and facts about a process that has kept his clients out of court and saved them thousands of dollars. If you aren't familiar with divorce mediation, or your lawyer has told you it's not appropriate for your case, this show is for you. After listening to Divorce Mediation, Myths and Facts, you'll tell anyone considering a divorce, go to mediation first. Divorce Mediation, changing the culture of divorce.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.fightsafe.com for more information. You'll also find information there on Susan's upcoming Crime Prevention 101 personal safety teleseminars. Think fast, talk fast, fight smart, which stress the many opportunities you have to deter or defuse a criminal encounter and how to use your brains instead of your muscles in a fight. Look for the new book information or sign up for Susan Bartlestone's personal safety seminars at www.fightsafe.com today.
News. Opinion. Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions at fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions at fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
And welcome back again. Talking with Laura Beth Nielsen and Brittany Shute about street harassment, and this we're coming down to the end of the show here, and I there is so much more to talk about, and I've actually been thinking I'd like to do another show. I don't want this issue to just fade away, and I'm going to talk to you both about that, where we can pick up with this. So just for right now, Laura Beth, some final thoughts on this in terms of the legal restrictions, and do you personally advocate legal restrictions on public speech?
Well, final thoughts for me are, first is that I think it's important that we recognize these harms. All of these things that we've been talking about women blaming themselves, that there's unequal access to public space, that women change the way they dress, talk, and interact. There's a lot of social science and social psychology data that show when you invoke race or gender to people, it has extremely negative health consequences. It has negative behavioral and psychological consequences. One of my most important goals of writing this book was to begin a discussion of these harms and a recognition that they're very real. And once we've nailed down that there are harms, then we can start to talk about laws, because in the area of speech, it's always a balance between we like to protect speech, we like free speech, we like people to be able to express their ideas, and we balance that all the time against harms like inciting a riot or threatening someone. And so in writing the book, what I really wanted to do was to bring to the fore what are the harms that are on the table, because it's sort of been poo-pooed as an idea for legal regulation. My position, personally, is that the law should at least be consistent. If we're going to recognize that unsolicited street speech between strangers in public is something we need to limit when it bothers some people, then when it bothers other people, there should be protection also. And we should recognize street harassment as part of the broad spectrum of violence against women and male domination, in the same way we do other things that we used to think of as outside of law's purview, like in the home behind closed doors, in the workplace, and the like. So
that's right.
I think we could do this. I think we could do this without infringing too much on the First Amendment, and I would like to see us try.
A License to Harass is an important book on this topic. Where can people get this book?
Well, you can buy it at any bookstore. You can have them order it for you if it's not in stock, and, of course, on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, all of those book websites.
Absolutely, and just go Laura Beth Nielsen, and it was N-I-E-L-S-O-N.
S-E-N, actually.
S-E-N, oh, gosh, sorry.
Okay.
N-I-E-L-S-E-N, Laura Beth Nielsen, License to Harass. Terrific.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brittany Shute, any final message that you'd like to give about street harassment or about Hollaback, and how can people find Hollaback?
Following Laura's pretty hard. I think that it's good. That's how it should be. I mean, I think that the takeaway from, you know, if you go to any of sort of the Hollaback websites, if you go to stopstreetharassment.com, which is a sort of a newer U.S.-based street harassment website. If you go to any of those kind of sites, assuming this is a U.S. audience, I think that
we're
the takeaway
internet,
message.
Baby. We're all over the world.
I know.
I want you out there in Egypt logging on. I'm sure.
I think that the takeaway from sites like Hollaback sites is that people are not alone, and that's really what has been something that I've just sort of on a really personal level shared with people over the last few years. You know, I've had roommates who moved in with me and didn't ever think about this issue until they lived with someone like me. And, you know, maybe I'm more of a radical than some people, but it happened to them all the time, and it wasn't something that they thought about as being something that could change. It wasn't something that they thought about as being as violating as it is, even though they would do all of those things. They would change what they would wear. They would walk different ways. We would, you know, we live in Massachusetts where you have to have a license to carry mace. Everyone I know has pepper spray in their purse. I mean, we don't care. Like, we're going to do what we need to do because we want to feel safe. And so I think that that's what most people get out of the sites, is that they don't feel alone. They feel like, look, this happens to other people all the time, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of the street harassment websites catalog some of the worst of it. I mean, which is, I think, you know, women need to be aware that, you know, like you said earlier, compliments.
Right.
Compliments are just as violating. It just depends on the context. So
that's right.
You know, but, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's
right,
what works for you.
Look up Hollaback, and they'll find one near them. Hollaback, Hollaback, and if you're in Boston, it's Hollaback Boston. If you're in New York, it's Hollaback NYC, and so forth. Thank you, Brittany, so much. For my own comments here, again, I love it. I love that it gives you, the Hollaback websites give you resources and a way to do something about it. From the self-defense perspective, just evaluate carefully what you're prepared to respond to, and don't blame yourself for being a target of it, and don't blame yourself if you decide not to follow up on it. Unpleasant consequences can result that you have to be prepared for. For more resources, go to those Hollaback websites. And for any of you out there who are already a survivor of this kind of crime or any other crime, sexual assault, violence, whatever it may be, please, 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 nothing that happened to you was your fault. Even if you think that you used bad judgment in a situation and left yourself vulnerable, that is never, 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 never an excuse for a crime or for violence of any kind. And you have got to call yourself a survivor, not a victim. And please understand, with proper professional help, if the traumatic incident was really serious, with proper help, you can put what happened in perspective, and you can get on with your life. I've worked with thousands of survivors. I know this to be true from the bottom of my heart. I'm telling you this. For any of you that would like to go back and hear some past episodes of Crime Prevention 101, you can go to my host page on voiceamerica.com website, and they're all archived there. You can also, if you want a direct link, go to crimeprevention101.com. We'll take you right there to that page. I'm going to post a link to License to Harass on Amazon.com on my Dear Safety Solutions .com website, and I'll put up some links to Hollaback Boston and Hollaback New York City and some of the other ones for you, so you can get right there to it. I'm going to put this woman's letter about the sexual harassment cards that she came up with on my website. So that will give you an option for yourself. And as always, if you've got a question or a comment about today's show, you've got a safety concern you'd like me to help with, you've got a topic for future shows, DearSafetySolutions.com. You can post your question to me there right on the left side. Next week, I got a lot of mail I'm answering on this show. I've got all sorts of topics you wanted to hear about. So stay tuned and stay safe. It'd be a crime not to listen.
We hope you got some useful information and inspiration this week on Crime Prevention 101. Susan Bartlestone invites you to join us again next Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time and 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on Voice America. Have a great weekend and a safe weekend.